So remember that time I said that my show was going to be daily, and then I promised everyone it was going to be daily, and then a bunch of really bad things happened to me in that same week, and I wasn't able to go daily? Yeah. Life is hard, kids. Life can be hard sometimes, but you know what? We're just going to keep moving on. I'm going to keep persevering. I'm going to keep trying to give you this show as much as I can amongst all of the current drama that's going on in my life. I will not bore you with it. There's parents having health issues. There's potentially me moving out of my house. Lots of stuff going on. But this podcast really helps me get through these things. And I love being able to do this for you guys. So with that out of the way, here is your movie news rundown for today. With the controversy of Harvey Weinstein still looming over Hollywood, more stories seem to keep popping out that involves him specifically, and this latest one actually involves Uma Thurman, Harvey Weinstein, and Quentin Tarantino. And apparently this is about a cover-up, so to speak, that seemed to have happened on the set of Kill Bill 2. During an interview with Uma Thurman, she kind of revealed that while on set, there was this car crash that went down and that involved her. And how the car crash kind of came about was Quentin urging Uma to drive the car herself. This was during the scene in which Uma is in that sort of Caribbean island with those rough dirt roads and palm trees everywhere. And Quentin kept insisting that she drive the car herself for the camera. And she didn't really know how to drive the vehicle in question. She felt kind of unsafe about doing it. Thought that a stunt driver should have done it, but through much convincing and much egging on, kind of put her in this position where she felt obligated to do it. So she gets in this car and drives, and this is revealed in a video that she posted through her Instagram. The video is on her Instagram account right now, @iThurman, and you can tell that she's driving through this sort of back road countryside, and the car is being very skittish and all over the place, and she kind of just turns one way to the left a bit too early, and she just crashes right into this tree. And it's not a very, you know, severe crash, but enough to give you severe whiplash. You can tell that she kind of hits her head and is kind of stunned for a bit, and it takes a bit for the crew to get to her. But her Instagram post kind of puts the Me Too movement, this sexual, not sexual harassment, but abuse of power situation into question, saying that the footage that she has posted here came with Quentin Tarantino's consent. He wanted to help her through this sort of her being able to expose further how Harvey Weinstein and his crew kind of kept this under wraps, and it was apparently like under lock and key, this footage. It was taken from set and hidden away somewhere, and that somehow they were able to uncover it recently, and through Quentin giving her the blessing to say yes, do this, like he feels very bad about what happened on that set that day, that he gave her all of the permission in the world to, you know, say his name, that he was involved, and to show the footage. And the Instagram post is as quoted, "I post this clip to memorialize its full exposure in the NYT by Maureen Dowd. The circumstances of this event were negligent to the point of criminality. I do not believe, though, with malicious intent, Quentin Tarantino was deeply regretful and remains remorseful about this sorry event, and gave me the footage years later so I could expose it and let it see the light of day. Regardless of it likely being an event for which justice will never be possible, he also did so with full knowledge it could cause him personal harm, and I am proud of him for doing the right thing and for his courage. The cover-up after the fact is unforgivable. For this, I hold Lawrence Bender E., Bennett Walsh, and the notorious Harvey Weinstein solely responsible. They lied, destroyed evidence, and continue to lie about the permanent harm they caused and then chose to suppress. The cover-up did have malicious intent and shame on these three for all eternity. CAA never sent anyone to Mexico. I hope they look after other clients more respectively if they in fact want to do the job for which they take money with any decency. So this is huge. This potentially could put Quentin Tarantino on that same chopping block as everyone else, though through his actions, it seems he's not hiding anything. He's had a very close relationship with Harvey Weinstein. He's produced all of his films throughout his career. So this is huge news, and the footage is pretty crazy. So go over to Uma Thurman's Instagram at iThurman and check it out and see it for yourself. A couple months ago, a story dropped that really shook the foundation of the future for superhero film, in that Fox was going to be bought by Disney Studios. The news would indicate that if this deal went 100% through, that the Marvel Cinematic Universe would then be able to include characters like the X-Men, like Deadpool, Cable, the Fantastic Four. All of the properties that Fox owns could then be possibly integrated into a new series of Marvel movies. But the deal has never been actually solidified, and even if it had, the deal would take several years before it actually went into place. But this whole thing seemed like a pretty done deal because lots of people were bidding for the acquisition, and Disney's offer of the initial offer of $52.4 billion was never, you know, in contention or in competition with everyone because that price is so high. But recently, another story came out that race may still be going on, as CNBC has announced that Comcast, the huge internet cable conglomerate that owns DreamWorks Animation, they own Time Warner Cable, they own NBC Universal, and a slew of other smaller businesses, apparently they are now in the running back in the conversation to maybe buy Fox. The negotiations are technically not finalized, and that Comcast is considering topping Disney's initial offer of $52.4 billion to try and gain this company. Now, apparently with Comcast being, you know, involved in wireless networks and also phone companies and cable services, that its acquisition would actually have a harder time passing government regulation, because when these huge, larger than life, enormous companies start to engulf other larger companies, the government kind of tends to keep an eye on those things and will step in and stop them from getting too much of a monopoly on their business, or for becoming so powerful and so rich and so wealthy that, you know, they can't really be governed to an extent. So, but Disney absorbing Fox seems to be an easier choice for them to let it happen. Although I think Disney is already one of the hugest and like most influential companies around, that absorbing Fox will only just like put more of a stranglehold on the entertainment industry as far as the properties that they have, because Comcast, for the most part, you know, they have a few good properties under their belt, but you know, this would really put them into that superhero genre, and you know, they would definitely step up as a company. So it's really interesting because, you know, fanboys especially have been freaking out ever since the news came out that Disney had the potential to buy Fox. And the potential for the Marvel Cinematic Universe to grow, you know, the way the X-Men movies and Deadpool has been going, you know, would they keep things R-rated? You know, Disney's more for a kid brand, even though their Netflix shows are R-rated, would the X-Men shows go to Netflix then? It's all been a lot of questions that aren't really answered at this point. But just if you were one of those few people that were following this deal, just know another player has entered and it's not final yet. Dwayne motherfucking The Rock Johnson continues to surprise the movie landscape with his ability to take these films, these concepts that don't seem like they would really gain the heights of record-breaking statuses, and continues to just shove that in everyone's face with his last movie, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. It was the biggest hit of late December, early January, gaining $857 million worldwide. When it debuted in China, it overthrew Star Wars The Last Jedi, and even did that so in the US once or twice, I believe, in the later runnings of both films. And I saw the film, and I actually surprisingly liked it. I don't know what the surprise factor is of it. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the original Jumanji, and I guess when you see the trailer for this film, yeah, it looks fun, and it's got some good actors and a fun premise, but, you know, you think it's just going to be very standard by the book, and in some ways it is, but the personalities in this film, they really gelled well together, and there was a lot of sequences and jokes and things that I didn't really expect, and it just was a very fun, satisfying film that had lots of legs, and people kept going back to see it, wanting to check it out. And of course, when things are profitable and do well, they get a sequel. And looks like Deadline has reported that Sony Pictures is moving forward the development of the sequel, not necessarily greenlit, but they are hiring the same writers who wrote the original, this Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle picture, Scott Rosenberg and Jeff Pinker, who surprisingly are also writing the upcoming Venom movie starring Tom Hardy. And the film will reunite the whole cast, apparently, which will bring back Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan, which is a little odd to say because, you know, it was a different premise than the original Jumanji. They got sucked into a video game this time rather than a board game. But would their avatars still be the same? I mean, if it's the same video game, it would be the same characters, but would the levels change? How would the story be different? Maybe since they beat the game, it becomes a different, you know, level or world, but they get to be the same characters. That would be kind of interesting to see how they pull that off. Would they still have the same identities and characters? Because sort of the premise of the film was, it was kind of a bit of a coming-of-age story about, you know, very typical genre of high school students. You had your nerd, your jock, your, you know, beautiful girl, your shy girl. And all of them had to work together and kind of overcome their fears and their insecurities and became better people by the end of the film. But that was sort of done through the avatars they had to be. So the hot girl was a fat guy, and the big strong jock was a little tiny Kevin Hart, and the nerd kid was The Rock. So would they stay the same personalities? Would maybe the girl be The Rock this time? Would the jock become Jack Black? You know what I mean? Or would there be a new set of actors that would go into those avatars and display different personality traits? So that was weird. When I saw that the original cast was coming back, there was a lot of questions that I had in my mind of how that would play out. But hey, this film was super enjoyable. I really liked it. And I am actually looking forward to a Jumanji reboot sequel, which is something I never thought I would say. Because when this film was coming out, I was super not happy about it. I'm a big Jumanji fan. I love Robin Williams. I grew up on that movie, and I definitely didn't think it was going to have the same heart and soul as the last one did, and it looked like it was just going to be a blockbuster, flash in the pan, Michael Bay style reboot, and it didn't turn out to be that at all. And to the surprise of many people, obviously, who went to see it multiple times. So I mean, keep on the development story for this, and we'll see when the release date might be coming out soon. Oh, and have you seen Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle? Fuck, wreck that. Have you seen Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle? If so, call in. Let's talk about it. If you thought that the Star Wars franchise was going to end after this next installment of Episode 9, you better think again. Not only is there going to be a new trilogy written and created by Rian Johnson, who directed The Last Jedi, but news has just dropped that another series of films will be coming out that is going to be helmed and written, produced by the creators of, get this, Game of Thrones. David Benioff and D.B. Wise, who are the showrunners and the essential creators of one of the most popular fantasy genre shows of all time, Game of Thrones, will be developing another trilogy aside from Rian Johnson's trilogy. We are getting 6 new Star Wars films over the next, I'm guessing, 10, 12 years. This series has been stated it will be separate from the Skywalker saga that started with A New Hope. So same thing with Rian Johnson's trilogy. His set of films have been, the only bit of information that's been released about them is that they will have nothing to do with the Skywalker saga. And it looks like this series of films will not have anything to do, with the Skywalker saga as well. Kathleen Kennedy, the president of Lucasfilm, who took over from George Lucas when Disney bought the company, stated in a press release, "David and Dan are some of the best storytellers working today. Their command of complex characters, depth of story, and richness of mythology will break new ground and boldly push Star Wars in ways I find incredibly exciting." Benioff and Wise went on to say as well in this same statement, "In the summer of 1977, we traveled to a galaxy far, far away, and we've been dreaming of it ever since. We are honored by the opportunity, a little terrified by the responsibility, and so excited to get started as soon as the final season of Game of Thrones is complete." So, wow. This is just incredibly satisfying news to hear. As we all know, the next season of Game of Thrones will be the last season, and it's one that we are all waiting at bated breath to see and see how they're going to end all this, especially when they have a book that's out there that's ahead of the show or behind the show. I'm not too sure how the books and the TV shows are running at this point, but if anyone was going to take on, you know, creative directors for a series of films, man, they chose the A-team for this project. And you know, there's lots of rumors and lots of Star Wars fans especially throwing out different, you know, elements of stories that, you know, Rian Johnson was going to use. You know, a lot of people really want a Knights of Old Republic storyline from that amazingly famous role-playing game that came out on Xbox a long time ago that I had the pleasure of playing both of them. And man, I mean, if Rian Johnson or the Game of Thrones guys don't at least pick that storyline to go with, they're doing themselves a huge disservice. Because for any of you people who are listening are Star Wars fans, but I've just been, you know, only have been involved in the films, the prequel films, these new set of films, and have not gone into any of the comic book lore or Knights of the Old Republic lore. It's basically like, because obviously we're in a galaxy far, far away, so these events of Knights of the Old Republic take place in the Star Wars universe, but thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, when the Sith and the Jedi were like first being developed and the legends of certain Sith and Jedi masters, this is how they got their stories developed, and some of them are just insane and would make for dramatic, amazing storytelling and develop new legends, new characters for everyone to fall in love with. So Game of Thrones fans, get psyched. Your boys are headlining a new series of Star Wars films.
My name is Taika Waititi. I am the director of Thor Ragnarok. Ultimately, this film is about Thor Ragnarok and his journey to some outer space places. People often ask me, why did you become a filmmaker? Well, the main reason, just wanted to impress my mum and dad and to show them I'm not a loser. I don't care what you say. I can achieve some dreams, not my own dreams, but other people's dreams. I can get close to being J.J. Abrams. I know you wanted him as a son, but you got me. I'm sorry, I'm not J.J. Abrams. They say, oh, Taika, we wish we called you J.J. Abrams. Would have been so much cooler, you know, than Star Wars. Well, I didn't. All right, Mum and Dad, I didn't. You're stuck with me. Okay, now, down to the nitty-gritty. Why did I make this film? For kudos and followers on Twitter. What I really wanted to do with Thor was capture the essence of Peter Pan with a little bit of Terminator 2, a dash of Independence Day, a smidgen of On Golden Pond, with that kind of tone of beaches mixed in with My Fair Lady. So I think we've achieved that. At the end of the day, when all said and done, the film's about some monsters, some explosions, pretty ladies, handsome men, there's a Hulk, then it's the credits at the end, all the names of the people who made it. That's what we tried to do, and I think we did it. That's what I wanted to achieve with this film. Full respect from Taika Waititi from New Zealand.
Two huge trailers have recently dropped for upcoming films Deadpool 2 and Tom Hardy's Venom. So the Deadpool 2 trailer is much more of a full trailer than the Venom one is. In it, we get to see all of that amazingly awesome Deadpool humor with breaking the fourth wall yet again. This trailer for Deadpool shows off Cable for the first time in full form, in action with the metal arm and some really awesome quick action scenes. And I am so stoked for this. This filmed in my hometown of Vancouver. And, you know, the success of Deadpool was one that a lot of us never thought we would ever, A, see a Deadpool movie, but B, have it be the runaway hit that it became and how the creators could have gotten that character so perfectly. And when you watch this new trailer for Deadpool 2, you will see that they are still on the ball with that same tone, that same hilarious action. You know, Ryan Reynolds still looking at the camera to the point of when the trailer first starts, you get a first look at Cable and he's walking towards the camera and you notice that his arm has a green sleeve on it where his metal arm should be. And Deadpool just goes, oh my god, really? We couldn't afford this goddamn CGI at this point? Like, at least we know how to remove a goddamn mustache from a person. Kind of taking a gouge at Justice League with the whole Superman debacle that happened with removing his CGI mustache. But anyway, this trailer is awesome. It'll get you so psyched for the movie. If you haven't seen it yet, go on YouTube and watch it right away. Now, as opposed to Venom, which, all I can say about this teaser for Venom is that it kept its tone the same from all the other promotional material in that we still have not seen Venom. Still. The film is, like, it's the trailer, it's a teaser trailer, like I said, it's only like a minute or so long. And it really just sets up a vibe of what the film may be. Very quick shots. You do get to see a shot of the symbiote in a canister. Tom Hardy kind of laid on an MRI gurney somewhere. You know, having this narration about, you know, one day you're one thing, the next day you're something else. And this kind of quick shots of carnage and some sort of big event happening that's the aftermath of. And that you get a quick shot of Tom Hardy convulsing and writhing around on this gurney as this black stuff starts riding up his neck, and then it just cuts to the logo for Venom, which, you know, it's kind of reassuring to know that they're going for this darker, more dramatic tone for Venom, as you have to have with this character. But the fact that we're still not seeing any footage of not just Venom, but no superhero connectivity to this, it just feels like Eddie Brock, the movie you never wanted. And it left a lot of fans very unsatisfied. I mean, it got me a little excited for Venom, I'm not gonna lie. I'm such a huge Venom fan that any movie we're getting of a solo Venom film is gonna get me interested, obviously. And you can, even though the trailer never shows off Venom, you can tell they set the tones right. They've got a mood going on that seems to be going down the right path. But man, if you're going to have a trailer versus trailer conversation, which I guess this has become, Deadpool 2's new trailer blew Venom right out of the water. Josh Brolin looks like he's going to fucking kill this role of Cable. And all of the, you know, characters you love from Deadpool are going to be in this one, plus a few new ones that show up in quick cameos that we have no idea which X-Men characters they're going to be. We do know Domino is in there. You do get a quick shot of her in the trailer, her kicking some ass. And yeah, so Go on YouTube right now, watch those trailers, let me know what you think. So J.J. Abrams dropped a huge bomb on the world when, right after the Super Bowl was about to end, an ad came up saying that the premiere of the new Cloverfield film is going to be premiering on Netflix with no prior warning, no marketing whatsoever. The best marketing you could ever do is put your first spot during the Super Bowl. And the Cloverfield films, there's two entries into the franchise so far. First one being more of a found footage film that had like a Godzilla aspect to it, of these monsters that just kind of show up in New York. Nobody knows what's going on. It's very frantic and crazy and really fun. The second one being more of a psychological thriller that takes place in the same world as the first Cloverfield, in that as these monsters are attacking the city, somewhere far away, somewhere else, this woman is trying to escape the carnage and winds up going into this man's bomb shelter that he then keeps her there against her will, saying, "You can't go outside, it's too dangerous, you're gonna die." But we don't know if there's real monsters actually happening. It becomes kind of like, well, was I just seeing things? It makes for a very, very good film. That came out, I think, in 2016 with John Goodman, I believe. Anyway, so this new entry into the franchise gets announced during the Super Bowl, and everyone's blown away because there's a lot of very avid fans of the Cloverfield projects, and this looked like it was going to take place in space. It's called the Cloverfield Paradox. It was going to explain how the monsters appeared there in the first place, and looked like it was going to be this crazy Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, interdimensional mind fuck that, you know, these scientists fuck with this electron particle accelerator and breaks into a new dimension and monsters start coming out and, oh my god, exciting. Well, the film itself, after being released, did not really come to be a very good film. Let's just be really frank about this. The film did not turn out to be good. Fans were pretty disappointed, myself included. It just seemed like there are better versions of this concept out there in different various films of the psychological thriller, lost in space, weird interdimensional stuff's happening and they're all trying to figure it out. But turns out that the reason that they put this on Netflix to begin with was a rescue plan hatched by Abrams after seeing the final cut of the film, because apparently it was supposed to go to theaters. It was going to go to the box office and it was going to be under Paramount Pictures. But after seeing the final cut of the film, they were worried that it would just die at the box office and it would ruin their investment of making this movie. So J.J. Abrams apparently hatched a plan along with Paramount Chairman CEO Jim Giannopoulos and Netflix Chief Ted Sarandos and the head of original film Scott Stuber. And they got together and said, you know what we can do? Let's get a Super Bowl ad going. Let's just surprise everyone. Let's make everyone just so crazy excited that this film has just landed in their lap that they'll just rush to Netflix to watch it, and that'll give it at least a boost of interest, and that's the best possible way we can get the most out of this film. And Netflix apparently liked that plan so much they paid $50 million for the movie, which I don't know what the budget for this film was. It looked like it had a lot of special effects and a lot of high, looked like it had a high budget. I mean, but $50 million, I don't know if that meant it lost its money or if they, maybe it was a $24 million movie that they then paid $50 million. Whatever that price tag is, Netflix liked the idea of this big push towards their brand. And according to this report also, it makes the movie instantly profitable for the studio, which avoids a likely misfire and costly marketing campaign. And Netflix got what it was looking for, regardless of withering reviews, for 18% on Rotten Tomatoes at the time it got released. So, man, smart move, J.J. Abrams. And if anything, it gains the Netflix brand attention, brings everyone viewership to the brand. Whether the film is good or not doesn't really seem to be the reason they did it. They just hatched a plan saying, Netflix, this will be a big push for you. Everyone's going to go to your platform after the Super Bowl, and it looks like they did in spades. So if you didn't know this already, when it comes to DC Entertainment, they like to throw a lot of film titles out there. They like to announce a lot of movies that may change, get erased, or dates be moved 5 years into the future. So needless to say, when they announce a project, unless it's literally being filmed, I don't take them with a grain of salt. I mean, right now, Aquaman's in the can. That's going to be released later this year. They're filming Wonder Woman 2. That is for sure going to be greenlit and being on set soon. Shazam is currently being filmed at the moment. But there are a slew of films they have announced in the last few years of Suicide Squad 2. They've announced several Joker projects. They've announced Gotham City Sirens. That's supposed to be, you know, Batgirl, Poison Ivy, and Catwoman. There's supposed to be a Batgirl standalone movie with Joss Whedon. There's supposed to be a Green Lantern Corps movie. All these films, Flashpoint, that's apparently now got a director behind it and is moving forward. But their track record for bringing movies actually on the set, filming them at this point, are shoddy at best. But this piece of casting news was too good to not at least address it. Because out of those Joker origin movies that I previously said, apparently one has broken through the mold and is coming to fruition, with Todd Phillips, the Hangover director, directing. And who is playing the Joker? Joaquin Phoenix, Walk the Line himself, will be playing the Joker, the Crown Prince of Crime. And apparently this story is going to be more of a gritty crime drama that's set place in the 80s that's going to, I guess, give the Joker an origin story and let you see how he becomes a criminal mastermind and how he chooses to do what he... I don't know, guys. For me... I mean, yes, in the comic books, there have been storylines that have dived into the Joker's origin. The best one, obviously, being The Killing Joke, where they set up the scenario that the Joker, before he became crazy and fought Batman and got thrown to Avada Chemicals, was a struggling comedian who had a wife and an apartment and was dead broke, got involved with some gangsters who needed some quick cash called the Red Hood Gang, that he joined them on a heist that they set him up to take the fall for, that Batman then showed up, chased him into Ace Chemicals. They had a tussle on a scaffolding, threw him into this vat of chemicals that scarred his face to look like clown makeup, where his skin was white pigmented, his lips were red, and his hair was green. And then when he came out of the vat, he just went insane and then became this serial killing clown who just took over the world and caused nothing but trouble for the DC heroes for years and years on end. So that is literally the only origin story we've ever gotten. And the thing that has made the Joker so great is because you don't know what he's going to do. You don't know his backstory, his origins. You don't know how he became how he was. And that makes him so unpredictable and so uncalculating. I mean, in Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger's Joker, every chance he got, he would tell someone a different origin story. He would tell someone a different story of how he got those scars. He would keep them off balance. You would never know who this guy was or why he was doing what he was doing. And that's the whole point of the Joker. So to make a film that's going to ground him in that way seems already way off base. But I want to give people the benefit of the doubt and think, you know, if you're going to make a gritty crime drama with the Joker as your centerpiece, there is potential there, sure. I mean, maybe if you just get the origin story out of the way in the first 15 minutes, then maybe you can go somewhere. But having Joaquin Phoenix play this role is what intrigues me the most. And Darren Aronofsky originally wanted him to play the Joker when he was getting ready to do a Batman Year One script, like way back in 2001 before Chris Nolan came on board. But yeah, guys, what do you think? Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, can he do it? Call in and let me know. All right, guys, that is the movie news rundown for today. I want to thank you all so much for listening, continuing to support me on this podcast, on iTunes, on Anchor. I know I keep promising to go daily. Like I said in the beginning of this, I got some really just rough news in my personal life over the last week and kind of put another block in me trying to develop this daily, but I'm going to keep pushing through. I'm going to keep trying to come up with content for you guys. I just finished the entire season of Altered Carbon, which is amazing. So I will be dropping a review on that hopefully in the next day or two. So thank you, everyone. Continue to call in, continue to interact and support each other with your podcasts. Thank you so much. And as always, put down the remote, go watch a motherfucking movie.